discussions?
All right, as Scott Simpson comes up here, I just, Kevin Roblin here again, Special Projects Coordinator. Scott Simpson and myself, you know, we took Gary's one-page document asking the department a few real detailed questions, and we attempted to answer some of those questions, and Scott has some data to present and share with the commission regarding non-residents and residents. And I guess with that, I'm just going to turn the microphone over to Scott. So here you go.
Thanks, Kevin. Scott Simpson, Administrative Resources Chief with the Division of Wildlife. Yeah, Kevin and I discussed, like you mentioned, some of Commissioner Jensen's and the commission's questions about who are non-residents. And as we went down through the list, there is a lot of things that we were maybe asked to identify and questions to answer about these non-residents. And looking through our data, we don't have a lot of great information on our non-residents. I'll have to be honest with you. So we looked at the information that we do have, and in order to start this conversation, to try to give you a little bit of a background on at least the information that we have, what can we tell you about non-residents? So the place that we really went to work on was the licensing database. I mean, every non-resident hunter that comes to the state has got to buy a license. We collect a certain amount of data from those individuals, and that's the information that we can present to you today. That's the factual information, what we know about these folks. It doesn't get to the questions that Commissioner Jensen, you know, are these sons and daughters or cousins, or did they live in South Dakota and move away? I mean, that's just not questions that we ask on a licensing application, obviously. So we wanted to present some of this information to you today about what we do know, and then we can continue forward in the coming months to identify some of those other questions. So what information do we have in our licensing database right now? It's pretty limited, like I mentioned before. The first thing that we'll talk about is the state of residence. Where do our non-residents come from? We looked at some age information about, you know, the same way that we've looked at our resident population of hunters. You know, we're going to look at that age structure just real briefly. Gender is one of those other things. There's not a lot of information about gender. You're either A or B, right? And but it's interesting that the non-residents, we'll get into those numbers, but they don't line up like the national averages. And then the last thing that we are going to look at is the type and frequency of the license purchased. We looked specifically at some of those licenses that are, well, archery, because it's a little, you know, it's part of our conversation right now. We want to look at the frequency that those individuals are purchasing licenses. And the other license type that we looked at was the small game licenses for non-residents. So that's, you know, it's obviously our biggest portion of non-residents that come to the state or purchase that small game license. So we'll look a little bit into those numbers. So when we look at the state of residence, we have a total of about 487,000 non-resident hunters that have come to the state from 2008 to 2017. The top five states that they come from, Minnesota, which is no surprise. I've always said that most of our small game hunters, about 25%, come from Minnesota. And when we look at it across all of the seasons, this includes archery and Black Hills deer and non-resident waterfowl and all of those things. When we look at it across the board, Minnesotans are about 103,000 of those individuals have been here in the last 10 years. They make up about 21% of our non-resident population. You can see the rest of those there, Wisconsin about 40,000. Texas was a surprise to me. I didn't realize that we had that many individuals from Texas. I would have guessed it was one of the surrounding states. And then again, Iowa and Nebraska. Those five states make up about 44% of the non-residents that come to the state. And if we add in Michigan and Illinois, which are the next two states population-wise that come, we can get 50% of all non-residents. So roughly 250,000 of those individuals are coming from seven states, which I don't know if I've got any revelation there. I don't think, but it does tell us a little bit about who our non-residents are, and that is where they come from. So the next thing we looked at was the age structure. And age structure, looking over those 10 years, just quickly put a chart on there. The age groups that we used were 11 to 20, 21 to 30. You can see that at the bottom of the chart on the left. And then by, I put up the a graph that I've shown before, and that is the structure of our resident hunters. That looked, it's a little bit different time frame. That's 2005 to 2015. But I thought it was interesting when you look at that, that you see that the non-resident age structure is real similar to the resident age structure. And when we have those conversations about R3 and recruitment, retention, reactivation, it appears to me that we better hope that the other states are just as engaged as we are, that they're doing the job that that we're trying to do. Because those individuals, those non-residents come to South Dakota and they purchase pheasant licenses, they hunt deer, and they pay a big portion of the GFP tab every year. And if those individuals fall off the cliff, like we've talked about, residents and non-residents, we're going to see some substantial impact in probably that 10 to 12 year range. So I just thought it was interesting. And the other part, just to kind of give you an idea of what this age structure is, hunters age 51 years of age or older, and we have hunters up into their, well into their 90s, they make up 50% of all of our non-resident hunters. So it's a, I don't have the information to go back and say, does that change over time? Have we gotten older? But I would say that, you know, what has happened to our resident population, I suspect the same thing has happened with our non-resident population. Gender, not a lot of information here other than we had 3.3% of our non-resident hunters are female. And on a national average, 19.3% of all hunters are female. So I don't know, when I was trying to come up with some reason for that. I don't have a great one, but I would suspect maybe that just the pheasant hunting thing may not be one of the activities that appeals to the female hunter, and that is the largest portion of what our non-resident population of hunters is. That's the only thing I can come up with. If somebody else has got a better idea, I'm sure open to it. I wouldn't fall on the sword with that that suggestion. Finally, I want to talk a little bit about the type and frequency of the purchases of the non-residents. And this is a little tough to read, but what I did was I went back through each state, all 49 states other than South Dakota, and broke out the information that we just went over, and we broke it out by each state. So we've got the age group for each state. We've got the total population of hunters for each state. And then we looked at that archery deer license and the small game license. And we went and we looked at the frequency with which they purchased those licenses. So you can see there the top one I picked out was Minnesota. If we go down to the small game license purchase frequency, you can see that 29,558 individuals from Minnesota bought one license in the last 10 years. But if we go over to 10 out of 10, so there is 2,734 individuals from Minnesota that have had a small game license each of the last 10 years. And we've got everything in between there. So what I did is I did that for every state. I put that into the handout that you have. That'll give you the information if you're curious about Arizona, Rhode Island, whatever it is. We've got the same information for each state. We also looked at the archery frequency because we know that that's certainly been something that has been a contentious issue is the non-resident archery allocation, and we have provided those numbers for you as well. So you'll have the frequency with which all non-residents purchase those archery licenses. So certainly don't want to go through every state and talk about those, but wanted to make sure that you did have all that information so that you can, if you do have questions about it or are curious, you'll have that information available to you. That is the extent of the information that I was able to compile out of at least our license database. Kevin and I have kind of kicked around this idea, where can we go get some more information? I think a lot of it is going to rely heavily on us going out and asking questions in the future. If we want to answer some of those other kinds of questions, it's going to require some level of survey work. We just have not collected that information in the past. We don't have a great avenue set up to do it right now. So with that, is there any questions?
I just have one comment, Mr. Chairman, on the Kathy Peterson, on the non-resident female hunters. In my particular family situation, my non-resident female hunter hunted until her children were born, and now she's in my house, and we're just having a great time And she's got the little ones in the house, and so sure. She will probably get back to hunting when her little ones get old enough to go out. But she has chose to be in the house instead of her husband.
Sure.
Probably teaching her how to bake pies.
Yes, doing there. Yeah.
Okay. Are there other comments on information we have? That's a lot of information there. Appreciate that. Have we talked about doing some type of a survey on non-hunters or non-resident hunters as we get more in depth into this?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Kevin Roblin here, Special Projects Coordinator. Again, for those listening in, there has been some discussions regarding a social scientific qualitative and quantitative type survey. We haven't really ironed out the details of that. We would need to really formalize that in a study prospectus. It'd be more like a postdoc, if you will. And if there are some questions that the commission really wants to answer, we need to talk about that and figure out how to answer them. And, you know, who are non-residents? Are they relatives? Are they family and friends? Those types of questions would require a pretty detailed survey. And that survey would require some pretty rigorous type quantitative assessments. And yes, that is something we could do, but something that the commission, if they want us to do that, we surely will do.
Go ahead, Russ.
Great data. I'm sure it was just a couple of keystrokes to put all this together with modern technology. So. Can't pat you on the back too much for all of the data that's here. Simple computing. Not like I had to go back and do a lot of research on this. In all seriousness, for this data here, are preserve licenses included in these numbers for non-residents?
Commissioner Olson, Scott Simpson, Administrative Resources Section Chief. The preserve licenses are included in the total number of hunters, but they are not included in the pheasant numbers. The pheasant numbers that you see, the small game license, is specific to that license type. So we would capture the non-resident hunters that are hunting on a preserve. They would be part of that total hunter number and included in the age groups and in the gender breakdown, but they are not part of the small game license frequency. We've got the query set up now. If that's something you have interest in, we can certainly pull it. So, yep.
Not too sure I would have answered him after he beat you up.
He has a little more to the backstory than the rest of the individuals do.
Okay. Okay, well, this is a start, Gary, I think.
Yeah, Commissioner Gary Jensen, I appreciate it very much, what you've done, and it is a good start, and there's been some discussion about putting together a work group like we've done for different critters, and I hope we can get that done, and we have a busy agenda, and we always do, but somehow we got to figure out how to put that together and keep going and see where it leads us. So thank you very much.
Commissioner Jensen, just to follow up on that, we will put a work group together. We will get a work group put together here and start that process. I would ask that there would be a commissioner, if willing, to be on that work group, chair that committee, if you will. We can iron out those details after the meeting, but yes, we will move forward and get a work group together to further have these discussions on non-resident and resident allocations.
All right, anything else? Okay, let's move on to item number 6,